This is Exploring the Marketplace Podcast. I'm Sean Bowles.
And I'm Bob Hassan. And together, we're inviting you into conversation about what God is doing with entrepreneurs, influencers, and everyday career fields.
Get a fresh perspective with our commentary and stay for the main chorus from our handpicked guests who are vulnerable, transparent, and sharing how their faith affects their career in powerful ways.
If a picture's worth a thousand words, then their life story is worth a thousand sermons. Here we go. Welcome to Exploring the Marketplace. I'm with my friend Sean Bowles. My name is Bob Hassan. Sean, how are you today and what are we doing?
Well, I'm good as usual. Thank God. I like that I wake up happy in most days, which is good. And this is one of those days. But I'm really good because we get to talk about the secret to those who maintain success and as opposed to those who never break into it. And it's a mindset, believe it or not. And I think it's a spiritual mindset even. But then our guest, Rianne Newquist, who along with her husband and her three kids, Bob, went to join a Mercy Ships Ministries, which is a ship that goes to some of the hardest places in West Africa and does medical missions. And there's hundreds of people on board. And they went to join, and he was a LAPD. She was, you know, in marketing and stuff in their background, pastoral ministry in her background. And then they joined this, and she's going to share the story about joining it right before the huge COVID broke out and what God did, which is going to be super exciting.
I can't wait to hear it. Do we have a sponsor today, Sean?
Well, I like that you ask. You know, right now, gold is at an all-time high, and we have a sponsor named Birch Gold, and they teach you how to take all of your retirement, not all of it, but a portion of your retirement, and actually invest it into gold and commodities, which is a pretty safe investment for the days we're living in right now. And so they'll teach you about your 401k. They'll teach you about your IRAs. So if you are looking into gold, you're saying, I wanted to do something, but maybe it's a bad time to invest because now it's so high. Is this a good time? Well, they have some incredible information for you at birchgold.com/Sean Bowles. And if you actually go there, you get a free information packet. It's not super salesy. It's going to give you a lot of information so you can use it, that information anywhere you look to buy, purchase, or whatever gold. But they actually have an incredible program and process that a lot of our viewers, a lot of our listeners have actually engaged in. And it's we've had great feedback back. We've had some really good, especially people who are like, man, I never knew where to start. I had one guy who knew exactly what to do with gold. And he's like, oh, this was too basic for me. So I was like, I'm going to go through this process myself. And we went through this process and it was not basic at all. I knew nothing about the gold and commodity industries. And I learned so much that even for the education itself, it'll help you. So go to birchgold.com, secure your retirement, secure your future. It's going to help you a lot. But we have an incredible real talk that is even more exciting than Birch Gold, because there's so many people right now that are experiencing that question mark of why am I stuck and others aren't? And Business Journal today had an article where they shared about one of the first, if not the first, I think it was the first Black woman who became a millionaire. And her name was Madam C.J. Walker. She was founder of the Walker Method. And she said the secret to truly being successful is to not rely on anyone else to make your opportunities happen. And she said, I had to make my own living and my own opportunity, but I made it. Don't sit down and wait for the opportunities to come. Get up and make them. And she wasn't saying, you know, be self-reliant for self-reliance sake. She's a Christian. She totally depended on God. She had this incredible faith that she talked about in almost every conversation. But she said this because so many people have been caught up in a victim mentality, or I need a sugar daddy process. And so, you know, there's an epidemic of people waiting on God in ways that I think are counterproductive a lot. And there's so much fear of striving, and that complacency is a thief to people when it comes to opportunities like this. And so we want to talk about this today, Bob, and I want to hear what you think.
Well, the church is an interesting place to want to strive and succeed. And I think this is a great topic because, you know, what I've heard over the years is, you know, we're to be meek and that we inherit the earth and we're to be peacemakers. Mm-hmm. And the inference from some pulpits in the 70s and 80s, at least, was don't strive, don't work hard, just let everything happen. Let God do it.
Yeah, passivity.
And I was never a passive person. You were never a passive person. And so, you know, as I grew up in the church, I ran into a lot of headwinds because I was building a business and not focused on the ministry, even though I was serving at the church. And so I think this topic is really, really interesting, Sean, and I'm really glad that we're bringing it up today.
Well, one of the quotes I found for this was that Thomas Edison said, "Opportunity is missed by most people because it's dressed in overalls and looks like work." Yeah. And I think that's so true. I mean, I think there's something about the movements I was raised in that were very passive when it came to success and business success and careers. And a lot of people weren't going to college because Jesus was returning soon. And mm-hmm. a lot of the pastors had never been to Bible school. And it felt like, and this is the Vineyard movement. I love the Vineyard. It was a great movement to be a part of. But it was very passive when it came to transforming culture around us. And when it came to actually having roles of success or authority, as a matter of fact, I remember telling a Vineyard pastor, "I'm going to go and I'm going to start a successful business." And he goes, "That's ambition." And I said, "Oh, thank you." And I remember like, good. I want to have godly ambition because I want to create something for God that matters. And I the same thing when I said, "I'm going to go have a successful ministry." And it was looked down upon to look for success on the earth because I was looked at as something that was not spiritual. Versus saying, I'm going to shine from the tallest candle that I could shine from, the tallest lampstand I could shine from. And that's what Jesus started his preaching career with, is like, we're to shine a lampstand and not be hidden under a bowl. And so that was my mentality, but it seemed to go against the grain of the world around me. So what would happen in those whole movements is people would get embarrassed by success, or they would hide their success because it was looked down upon as something that's less than spiritual.
Right. And we've talked about this a lot, spiritual versus sacred. I laugh at this quote because the first pretty much 5 years of my business, I wore overalls every day.
Oh, did you really? That's awesome.
These white overalls with a white shirt under with whatever the company name. And so, yeah, it just made me laugh. But I think people would ask me early, in my career, like, "Why aren't you a pastor?" And I wasn't called to be a pastor. I seemed to have this ability to, at that point, run a small business. And what I figured out later is that I was able to provide jobs and impact people's quality of lives that really, really changed them in a practical way, which I loved. And I think people who are waiting on God, there's just this misconception that if they're spiritual enough and they wait, everything will come. And in a lot of instances, God calls us to be patient and wait and be spiritual. But I've never found that instance in making a living or in a job. I found that we have to go partner with God.
You know what? I heard someone teach this. I think it was Miles Monroe, but I can't tell you who it was. It was 1 Corinthians 3:9, that you're co-laborers with God. And so if God's the only one laboring, you're not co-ing.
Right.
Co-laboring. And so it means that only half the fruit will come, and maybe not even that, because there's somebody that one can take 1,000, two can take 10,000. So it's almost this like place of human initiative has to be a priority to us, because that's all we can control. We can't control what God can do, but we can at least make the effort in our lives to be able to be responsible, and he had related it, whoever it was said, the spirit of a prophet is subject to a prophet in 1 Corinthians 14. And he was related to like, you are in control of what you can do spiritually. Yeah, but you're not in control of what somebody else can do for you or what opportunities will come, but you can respond to what God brings in front of you. And I just think that there's something that I see sometimes where, you see 100 people doing the same kind of job and one is super successful. And you and I have found out the secret sauce enough, which is faith was the secret sauce, to believe and have courage and believe God wanted to do something bigger, not than anybody else, but just bigger, just that they were going to do something bigger than they could have done. They're almost like competing against their own ability. Like, God's going to do something through me that I couldn't have done by myself. And you and I have interviewed people like that all along on the show, mm-hmm. who are just, it's faith is the issue. Just having courage, believing that God's going to open doors they can open, and then stepping in and doing what they could to partner to that, even when there was failure at times. And I think that that's the secret sauce.
I agree. And I think of the parable of the talents here, the 10 bags, the five bags, and the one bag. And, the guy who had the one bag, the master gave according to their abilities. And so the master knew what their abilities were, but the guy that had the one bag, he basically was in fear of his master. Later in the text, he said, "You're a hard man and I was afraid, so I buried the bag." And, the way I look at it is that it was just complacent. And a victim mentality, like, I don't want you to be mad at me if I try and lose.
Yeah.
And that's not that's not who God is. And I think we, you know, in our lives have to recognize that God is giving us opportunities according to our talents. Mm-hmm. And he wants to reward us by giving us double the bags if we succeed. And he wants to see if our talents maybe were not as accomplished as we're going to be later in our life. He wants to see us try.
Yeah.
And I think I look at the scripture, don't despise small beginnings. And there's a translation that I saw that after don't despise small beginnings, it said, for God loves it when we start. We just need to.
Yeah. I love when you say that, because you've mentioned that before on the show. It's like, mm-hmm. God, I never read that before. And I had to go back like several times and go, okay, God, he loves it when we start. He's just so good. You know, it's just, I love the goodness of God in the equation of all of this, that, yes. You know, none of us are the man or the woman for the job Jesus is. And we get to be a part of that because of what Jesus did on the cross, not because of we're so awesome or because we are worthy or because we'll build this character that's so incredible. It's just ultimately we have the best friend and we're grafted in to this man, Jesus, who paid a price for us. And so I think when you have that as the humility of what you're walking in, you don't care how far he takes you and you don't mind doing the dirty work today, because the dirty work today of just cleaning toilets is just as important as what God leads you into later if you're doing it for him. Mm-hmm. And I think you've lived that so well for, you know, your 40 plus years career. And I think it's just obvious, even when I meet your employees and stuff, I've met churches or been with churches where the pastor's been there for like 40 years and there's disgruntledness and there's politics and there's all kinds of things that are happening. And then going to your company or meeting some of your employees and just going, it's so beautiful that they've been with a man who's so pastoral in some ways. And so you and your wife have been such leaders to them spiritually. And there's such a legacy of fruit, even with the ones who aren't saved. And so I commend you for that. Well, we have a question of the week. I'm not going to let you debunk that. We have a question of the week from it's an ETM, Exploring the Marketplace question from Bowles Ministries website. So I'm so glad you guys are using the website to do this. We have those of you who are students in our online Spiritual Growth Academy are asking questions on Discord. We have bowlesministries.com, and you could ask questions on YouTube. So feel free to go to any of those places, depending on how you're involved with us. But he said, hi, this is such a great question for what we're talking about. I appreciate the podcast so much. A lot of them seem to be wonderful God stories in advance, et cetera. I've had my own factory heating business for 25 years and all just carries on. Is that okay too? I love the question.
You know, Henry, I hope you're listening to this, because I want you to write back into us. I want you to tell us your God stories of the 25 years of your factory business, yeah. And having all the employees and how you've changed their lives. I want to hear those God stories, how you've secretly prayed for them or overtly prayed for them, how you've given them raises and bonuses, how you kept them employed when business wasn't so good.
Yeah.
Henry, you have so many God stories. I want you to write back into us, and Sean and I want to hear some of them.
I love that you're answering it that way, because honestly, all of you who are listening, if we were interviewing you and asking you, like, where was your biggest breakdown and how did God show up? You might say, I had to put all my, you know, bills that month for my business on the credit card, or I was supposed to go to higher education, but no one was there to help. And so I had to go to like a community college first or whatever it is. And God led me. And there's these moments that you've been led by God that you may devalue in comparison to someone else's story when they're telling it on an interview. But those are the miracle stories that have built your faith. And that's what your testimony is built upon, is that relationship with God. And I know, Bob, you didn't feel very prophetic when we first, I mean, I came along as one of the more prophetic people in your life, and you didn't feel very prophetic, and you knew you heard from God, but it wasn't like a central theme at all. And I was like, Bob, you hear from God so powerfully. And I, you know, pulled you into some of the sessions and then some of the events we formed around us. And then we wrote this book together. And as we've gone, your language has changed, where it's like, oh, and then God showed me that. But it's not like, it's not trivializing it. It's actually just you have gotten in touch with how God speaks to you. So I hope Henry can too.
I do too. I really hope, Henry, you're listening to this. And maybe if we can reach out to him and say, hey, we have your question on this episode, because I want to hear his God stories.
Yeah.
And it reminds me, Sean, of in our book, Wired to Hear, I think it was in the first chapter when you were with a wealthy businessman who said he couldn't hear God. And you said, oh, really? Give me 5 minutes. And I'll work backwards. And I'll tell
you. It's never not worked, Bob. I've never had one time in my modern life in the last 15, 20 years that it's not worked. They always go, I do hear God. I hear God powerfully. It's like, and we can even start with a conviction of sin. Like, when's the last time you knew you did something wrong that God wanted to change in your life? Like, oh, God showed me this. I'm like, there it is. Yeah. He's with you. When's the last time you gave money? Well, I gave money to this thing. I didn't really want to, but you heard God, you know.
That's right.
Just those moments of like, people don't feel like they're in touch with God as they are. And he's just so good. He's just woven into our lives.
Well, okay. Enough of us. Who's our guest?
Well, our guest today, I'm excited to welcome Rayanne Newquist to the show. Along with her husband and their three children, they joined Mercy Ships in 2019, embarking on a life-changing journey that began with leaving everything behind in Southern California. And they boarded the Africa Mercy in Las Palmas and sailed for Dakar, Senegal, and for the very first field service. And during her time on board, Rayanne served the communications department and later in chaplaincy. And currently she works in the Mercy Ships U.S. Marketing Department. Rayanne is also a host of a New Mercies podcast, the voice of the Mercy Minute daily radio broadcast, and serves as a staff writer. And so we're so excited to hear her story because she went to some places with her husband during COVID to start a mission. I've never heard of anybody start their mission during COVID in the medical community, and we want to hear from Rayanne next. Are you ready to take your spiritual growth journey even more seriously, all while being involved in an active and engaged community online? Well, we have classes, activation groups, online Discord community, and a 12-month spiritual growth discipleship accelerator that I get to lead. They're going to help you embrace subjects like hearing God's voice, being empowered every day by the real gifts of the Holy Spirit, and developing your spiritual disciplines in a way that's both practical and very practiced. And I've invited expert ministers and all kinds of subjects alongside myself to teach you for 4 weeks classes each month. And if the subject that they're teaching each month isn't effective or is not relevant to the phase of your spiritual growth, we also take past classes and have our pastoral team facilitate totally different subjects for 4 weeks so you have multiple class options on subjects that matter to you. I can't wait to spend 2 accelerator hours a month with you as I get to activate you, pour into you, and mentor you in practicing hearing God's voice. By the end of these 12 months together, I know you're going to have confidence in your own ability to trust God and yourself and actively speak to you. Come join us in Spiritual Growth Academy. It's going to be one of the greatest decisions you've ever made.
Well, welcome back. We're here with Rayanne Newquist. So happy to have you, Rayanne.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, I am super curious because I read in our notes about you. We hadn't met before this interview, but I read in our notes that right before a very specific year, 2020, you and your family in 2019 sold everything, left everything, and joined a humanitarian mission that lives on, I believe, on the ocean on a ship to do medical tourism. No, I'm just kidding. Medical mission. So you got to tell, and some of the hardest places in the world, like, how did this happen? And that must have been a shock for your family as well to leave everything right before the whole world shut down. Take us on the beginning of your journey.
Yeah, if only we had known, right?
Yeah.
What was about to happen. But, you know, I think, gosh, the journey, as many journeys in our lives, it began long before 2019 when we first got on board. You know, I grew up in a home with a father that worked all over the world. So I was exposed to lots of cultures growing up, parents that traveled a lot, and always desired to see more of the world myself. Marry that with, you know, a faith and growing up loving and knowing Jesus, and then marrying a man who also loved the Lord. We kind of came to a place where my husband was eligible to retire and from actually a law enforcement career.
Oh, wow.
Prior to law enforcement, he was a pastor in a church, which is where we met, and then wanted to minister to the law enforcement community and left to do that. But after
you married a much older man, is what you're saying.
Thank you very much. Yes, I did. So once he was looking for careers post-retirement, he said he really wanted to get back into full-time ministry.
Wow.
And I'm a little bit more of the reckless one in the relationship. I wanted him to quit a long time ago and go do something crazy with our family, but he's very safe and calculated. Mm. And when he came to me and said, Mercy Ships is hiring a chaplain for 2 years, what do you think? I literally thought, yeah, whatever. You're never going to do that. You're never going to take your 3 kids and your wife to live on a hospital ship in West Africa. So yeah, go ahead, check it out. You know, I did not take him seriously. But God did. And God totally just gave him a passion for Mercy Ships. We had heard about it because a friend of ours was serving as a kindergarten teacher on board, which might not make sense. We're a medical mission, but yes, we have teachers on board because there's children on board that go to school. And she asked us to support her, and we did. And that's how we heard about Mercy Ships. And so, you know, fast forward 2019, we said yes, as God called our family to go, and left everything behind to do it.
Paint a picture of that though, because you're going to go on a 2-year tour for, at that point, that, as far as you know.
Right.
What is the Mercy Ship? Because some people will picture like a cruise ship mixed with like a medical office. Like, what is it really?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's not totally far off. I mean, we don't have like casinos and bowling alleys and stuff on board. But, you know, there are large vessels. We have 2 ships right now in our fleet, and one is currently serving in Madagascar. One is in Sierra Leone. Actually, just had our first patient a couple of days ago in that field service. And, you know, the ships, one of them is a converted rail ferry from Denmark, and wow, the other one was purpose-built from the ground up. And that one is our Global Mercy. Both of our ships have fully equipped state-of-the-art hospitals on board, and we do surgery. We're not general medicine. We don't do infectious disease, so we weren't very helpful in 2020. But we do free surgeries for people that have little to no access to medical care in sub-Saharan Africa.
Wow.
Roughly how many staff do you have on board, and how many hospital beds?
Yeah. So, you know, both ships are a little bit different. The Africa Mercy, that is our converted vessel, there's about 5 operating theaters on board, 75 ward beds, 5 ICU beds. And as far as the crew goes, gosh, that could be upwards of 700 or so. It just depends. Oh my gosh. We also employ about 250 local workers to come on board every day and be our translators and so forth. And then our larger ship, the Global Mercy, there's 6 operating theaters on board, 102 acute care beds in the hospital, and then there's another 7 ICU units and 90 self-care units as well. So the ships are awfully large. We have a lot of volunteers that we need every year to fully staff these ships, from our captains to our surgeons to our teachers, housekeepers, you name it. Everyone is a volunteer on board with one mission in mind.
So take us on the journey of your family though, because I mean, the fact that you guys, what did that look like to sell everything and just jump on a ship?
Yeah.
And how did that affect your kids and your family, especially again, going into coronavirus season?
Right. You know, it was really crazy. I think God really made it clear to our whole family. We had 3 kids. We have 3 kids, but at the time our son was 10, our twin daughters were 13. And if any one of them was like, no way, we don't want to do this, we wouldn't have done it. You know, our number one ministry is to our children, but our kids were all in. You know, I mean, a 10-year-old boy getting to go live in Africa on a ship, he's like, yes, count me in. my daughters were super excited. So the kids were great. Our turnaround time was very quick. From the time we were accepted to come on board to the time we actually got on board was really, really a handful of months. Like I want to say 3 or 4 months. We had a lot to do in that time. I mean, for my husband to retire from his career was a huge undertaking. All the paperwork and process you have to go through to do that. But it's not a requirement from Mercy Ships to sell your house and leave everything to go serve. That's just what God called us to do. God made it very clear to us that there is to be no plan B. You know, God just clearly said, do you trust me? We had several friends who said, don't sell your house, just rent it out. And my husband said, I will be stressed out the whole time across the world when I keep getting notices like, oh, the pool isn't working, or oh, the trees fell, or, you know, all this kind of stuff. Yeah. And just really felt like if we're going to do this, if we're going to say yes to God, then we're going to burn the ships. You know, we're going to cut ties and just go wholehearted after what God's called us to do. And we have no regrets. But there was definitely a couple moments 10 months later when COVID broke, you know, the whole world apart, that we thought, God, seriously, if you knew we were only going to be here for 10 months, why did you have us sell everything? It would have been nice to have a home to go back to. It would have been nice to have some cars or furniture. But you know what? We have no regrets in doing that, because we saw God provide for us in such extravagant ways, both in our going and in our returning. And our kids' lives, all of us, are forever changed because of our time on board, but especially our children, you know? I mean, our kids got to experience something that they never would have in Southern California. Specifically, you know, one of my daughters, I just dropped my twin daughters off 2 weeks ago at university. They're both freshmen at two different universities. And one of them at 13 years old on board the Africa Mercy, God called her into the medical field. Wow. And she just is in nursing school now in Alabama. And all she wants to do is finish her degree and get back on board and serve. So everyone who steps foot on our vessels, their lives are changed forever. Not just the patients, but all of us as well. We'll never be the same.
Wow. Ran, so you were on for 10 months and then COVID hit. And then did you transition to another job with Mercy Ships?
I did. So by the time COVID came into the world, I transitioned into chaplaincy with my husband, which is more my background in pastoral ministry. So we served in chaplaincy to really care for our crew throughout the field service, but especially during the traumatic event of COVID and shutting down a hospital ship in the midst of it. So when we returned back to the United States, we continued to minister to our crew who had been dispersed then all over the world, back to their home countries, serving, some remaining on board the vessel. And we would do, you know, weekly Zoom calls and check in with them, times of prayer. And then once everything kind of cleared up a little bit, then I was invited to come and work for our international support center, which is based out of Texas. And that's where I currently work in the marketing department for Mercy Ships.
Wow. So take us back again, your kids, I mean, it had such an impact on them. Take us to some of the points where God showed up the most for you guys and showed you why you initiated with Mercy Ships. Like what was the moment where it's like, this is why we left it all. This is why we sacrificed it all.
Oh man, you're gonna make me cry because I remember it so, so vividly. I got to be honest, time on board, I felt like I was a kid in the candy store. Mm. I had such a blast and I got to do it with my family. I feel like I kind of liken Mercy Ships a little bit to college and summer camp for adults because you're living with the same people, you're eating with them, you're playing with them, you're worshiping with them, you're working together. I mean, you're just together all the time. People leave notes on your door like they did in college, and you have crazy nights, theme nights where you dress up and do karaoke like at summer camp. So it's a ton of fun, but yet you're surrounded with these highly accomplished professionals that are known in their field. And, you know, it's just a blast to be on board in the community. But to be in this place, you know, we had no idea what we were walking into. We had no idea that in 10 months, the whole world was going to shut down. And in the midst of moments, especially in the first couple months where the kids are crying at night, they're homesick, they miss soccer, they miss baseball, ballet. You kind of have these moments as parents where you go, what did we do to our kids? What have we done? You know? But that dissipates and all of a sudden they find their rhythm and the adventure in it all. But when COVID hit, you know, we were already isolated on board our vessel and, you know, we didn't have any COVID on board, praise God. But because our crew come from all over the world to volunteer, all of a sudden they were faced with the decision of, do I fly home to take care of my own home country, especially all our medical professionals, all the nurses and doctors on board. So there were a lot of people leaving. There was a lot of concern with families being on board and kids and, you know, different things. It was so unknown, right? And I'll never forget, I'll just be honest with you, it actually became pretty traumatic on board and a little bit of a constant 911 situation. Whenever the captain is going to make an announcement or there's a ship-wide announcement, there's a chime that goes off throughout the ship. It's like, ding dong, attention crew, and you'll hear something. Well, we got to the point where those announcements were happening so regularly. Mm. When that little ding dong happened, everyone, like your heart kind of skipped a beat, like, oh shoot, what are they going to tell us now? You know, we had a moment where the U.S. Embassy came to us and said, we have 35 seats on a plane that's leaving tomorrow. Who wants to be on it? And we're like, where's it even going? Where's the plane going? You know, like what? You have to tell us now, yes or no. And we're like, oh my gosh. I mean, it was very stressful, very intense. And I remember our senior chaplain came to our cabin one night, very late, close to midnight. And he said, you know, there's a lot of people that are going to be leaving. What do you want to do? Do you guys want to leave? It's okay if you want to take your family and leave. And I'll never forget my husband with such conviction that literally I had never seen in our marriage before. He said to me, God called us here for such a time as this. God called us here to minister to the crew, and we are not leaving. We are going to stay and minister to the crew. Wow. And in that moment, I just thought I had perfect peace. And I thought, you know what? Absolutely. I'm all in, you know? And we did, we stayed. And that was the moment that I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that God said, I have you here for this moment right now. Because my husband, having 20 years in law enforcement, he was trained in critical incident debriefing, mm-hmm. you know, seeing all the atrocities on the road as he served in Los Angeles for 20 years. Mm-hmm. He had been trained in how to debrief. And so when we were having all of these really traumatic events happening with discharging patients and shutting down a hospital in a developing nation and all the craziness, he offered to debrief anyone who wanted all the medical teams in our hospital. And so he and I got to do that together. And it was such an incredible moment, I think, as a wife to see my husband in action, if you will. I mean, obviously I was never with him on the road or, you know, in his job, but to sit in a room of medical professionals, you know, maybe just five of them, we broke them down, and to hear him lead them through the traumatic events that had been going on, it was powerful. And it was a sacred, sacred space where people wow. found healing. And so I can honestly say that was the moment that I thought, you know what, God, that is why we are here. And even if it's only for 10 months, you knew that they would need his training and his expertise. And that was the moment.
Wow.
It's incredible when God uses our entire life for a moment like that. And
yeah.
It makes you look at the Lord and say, you know, how does he do this?
Yeah.
It's so supernatural that, like you said, for such a time as this, your husband was there and shining.
Yeah. And you know what, too, in his career, you know, towards the end, just feeling so purposeless and feeling like, what is this all for? Yeah. Then to have God bring that moment into his life. And then the last 20 years made sense, you know, mm-hmm. and how much is he doing that in our lives? You know, things that we think are insignificant or meaningless or routine and mundane, you know, and God's like, oh, I am at work doing things that you know nothing about. I love that.
So good. I mean, I think so many people relate to that who are even listening. It's like they're in the spot where they're paying the price in the front end, and then it realizes in the back end what's going to hit them, what's going to happen to them. So talk to us about you transitioning to a new role and you stayed with Mercy Ships. And that was obviously a sacrifice in itself. What caused you to stay? Like, what was the next God journey where it was like, okay, you're not just getting deployed somewhere else or for some other mission. This is your mission.
Yeah. You know, it was really a gift to be offered the opportunity to stay with the organization, because you're not just volunteering on board, but you're joining a family. And we have a little phrase, we say, once a Mercy Shipper, always a Mercy Shipper. And it's true. I mean, you join this intense family because you're living in such close quarters, 24/7, relationships are kind of like dog years, you know? I mean, a week on board is kind of like 5 months on board, you know? And then during COVID, it's kind of like 5 years.
I'm sure so, about the trauma too, because you guys are trauma specialists. Yeah. And medically, you're seeing these people who can never pay for anything, and they're having these life-altering moments on the ship. And it's not just one, it's in the thousands every year. So that would make a big difference too, because I want the listeners to just kind of relate to the fact that you have a pastoral heart, so you're telling us a lot about the crew and what happened there. But the bigger mission of Mercy Ships, like when these people come on the ship, they're forever changed. And you guys are doing something that nobody else would ever even pay the price for. And so that in itself, it's almost like a trauma bond, but in a good way, in the sense of what you guys are experiencing together and all this breakthrough that happens for all these people who are victimized by a lack of medical care. So I just wanted to kind of mention that in the sense that would accelerate your connection to each other, because you're doing something that's so significant for people. You're advocating for the people who don't have an advocate except for Jesus.
Yeah.
And he sent you guys. And so I think it's just so profound, but keep going. I didn't want to.
Yeah. I appreciate that, because it's very true. You know, we are experiencing some pretty severe situations. And although I'm not medical, all of our crew have opportunity to interact with our patients and to go down in the hospital for visiting hours. My kids, I mean, my daughter, who's now in nursing school, she would say to me all the time, "Mom, I want to go hang out with the patients." Wow. And we would go down and bounce balls with little kids. And, you know, you can't speak their language, but we have translators. You do form relationships and bonds with the patients. And so it does something to you, again, to see people in such need that you can't relate to, but to be a part of a crew who are there together with one mission to love on these people and to be Jesus to them, to bring hope and healing to people that have been marginalized, have been shunned, have been said, you know, told by their community that they're cursed because of their conditions. Mm. It bonds you together with them, but it also bonds you together with the body of Christ that is there to serve them. So it's a powerful thing. And you know, having the opportunity to continue to work with Mercy Ships and further that mission has been so special to me. And the honor and privilege that I had was to start a podcast for Mercy Ships and get to let our crew tell their stories in their own words. And so it was so fun for me to reconnect with so many people on board and to maintain those relationships, but also to let them testify of what God is doing on board, the miracles that we see when lives are changed, not only physically through our free surgeries, but also the patients' lives are transformed emotionally and mentally and spiritually as they, for the first time in maybe years, have someone that touches them and says, "You are valuable and you are loved," whereas their community has told them they're nothing for so long.
Rhianne, I think as we come to the end, why don't you tell us a few of those miracle patient stories about someone who was, you know, quote, cursed and then came to the ship, and what types of surgeries were the doctors performing? And let us just hear a little bit about these miracles before we end.
Absolutely. So we have about six areas of specialty that we do surgically. We do maxillofacial tumor removal, so large benign tumors on the face and neck that will kill people because they'll suffocate them, but they're totally benign. Remove those. We do orthopedic surgery to straighten windswept legs for children. We also do burn contracture, plastic surgery, reconstruction, wow, you know, quite a few major things. But one area of surgery that we do that's very special is our women's health. Mm-hmm. And we bring women on board who suffer from fistula, which basically means hole. And in developing nations where they don't have access to medical care, a woman who's pregnant and goes into labor, if there's any complications, there's really nothing to be done. So some of these women will labor for 4 and 5 days. And the baby will die. And in the process of trying to pass that baby, the woman's body is left torn apart. And often there's holes specifically in their bladder, and these women will be left leaking urine. Oh. There was one woman named Rugi, and that was her story. She had labored for 5 days and lost her baby and was leaking urine. So her husband totally disowned her. Her community shunned her because she smelled so bad. And for 10 years, Rugi lived in the bush. And by herself, totally alone. And every night she would take off her dress and wash it and let it hang to dry. In the morning, put it on only for it to be wet again in a couple hours. And she lived this way for 10 years until we found her. Our screening team had gone out and found her in a village and brought her on board our ship. Now, I love the story of Rugi so much because when she walked up the gangway, there was a nurse, a friend of mine from Australia, who met Rugi and held her hand as she walked up the gangway. And Rugi held her hand so tightly because she had not been physically touched for 10 years. Oh my gosh. She had not had human contact for 10 years. And this woman's healing began long before she even got in the operating theater, and brought her on board. All of a sudden, she's with a group of women who have her same condition. Mm. You know, she's been alone her, you know, 10 years. And she's like, "I thought I was the only one." And this community of the patients forms, and they heal each other in a beautiful way. But when these women have had their surgeries and they are dry for the first time in years, we throw a huge party for them. We call it the dress ceremony, where they are given a brand new African fabric dress that is awesome. Loud and light, and you know, the colors are fabulous, a new headdress, and we throw a huge party for them with drums and dancing and singing, and we celebrate the new life that they have kind of like Jesus does for us when he heals the broken parts of our lives. You know, he clothes us with a new name, that we belong, that we matter, that we are a child of God. And it's cause for great celebration. So Rugi had her life radically changed, and she is one of just millions that have been transformed because of Mercy Ships.
That is so awesome. What a story.
Wow.
Oh, man. Well, we're speechless, but we don't want to be completely speechless because we want people to listen to the podcast and support Mercy Ships. So tell us all about how people can listen and become involved.
Absolutely. So we would love all of you to get on board with us. You know, whether you want to pray for our ministry, which we desperately need prayers for our patients, our crew, the nations where we serve. We are volunteer based and we really rely heavily on our partners. So if God's put it on your heart to give, you can do that as well. But if you want to experience it for yourself, come get on board with us. Whatever skill you have, I promise you, we need. We are a floating city, baristas, housekeepers, cooks, receptionists, you name it, we need it. And you can find all those opportunities at mercyships.org/serve.
And then the podcast name, what is it?
The podcast is called New Mercies, and we've produced about 100 episodes that can give you a whole overview of any kind of crew on board, the job that they have, whether it be a captain or a surgeon or a nurse, and they will tell you all their stories.
It's amazing. Oh, I love this so much. Well, thanks for being on with us today. Thanks for sharing the story. I know many people were touched, like Bob and I were. And I'm just so excited that there's this opportunity for people to get involved with and pray into.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me.
Well, Bob and I are pretty speechless. Bob was getting tears in his eyes. He was tearing up, which I love. Not very common for Bob. I'm sure many of you were too. I want to encourage you to get involved with Exploring the Marketplace by going to bullsministries.com, clicking on Ask John and Bob a Question, or you can be involved by being one of our partners to make the show happen. We're so grateful for each and every one of you. Make sure to leave a comment on our YouTube or review at our podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you next time on Exploring the Marketplace.